the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
And we welcome you back to the big show. You've got another edition of Bucket Strategy Investing just ahead. I'm Johnny Dean, coming up in just a moment with me and the professor, Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group. We got a little discussion on a concept known as, it's not even really a concept, it's an actual practice. Sequence of returns risk. Yes, there is an actual risk. And what you might be able to do to potentially counteract it. First of all, what is it? Well, we're going to tell you what it is. If you think you cannot predict the market with deadly accuracy, you're right. If you think you'll never be able to time your retirement just right so that the market downturn doesn't happen the day you retire, you're right again. You don't want the market to dictate when you retire, but you have no idea when the market's going to go down. So you need to be prepared. We're going to tell you how to do that coming up here in just a couple of moments. So give us a call right now with your money question. Phone lines are open, 877-PLANNER. That's how you can give us a call, 877-752-6637. You can also head over to wealthed.com. That's our website. Send us an email at the Find Your Answer link near the top of the page. Either way, you get in touch with us right here on the program. Professor Rick Plum joins me once again from Lucia Capital Group. I'll tell you this, you need to get a strategy. You need one that addresses each of your needs. Lucia Capital Group will remind you of that. One that aims to make sure your retirement goals are covered the first time. Call our advisory team at Lucia Capital Group at this number, 800-644-1150. And we're going to talk about this in a second. The bucket strategy and why it's so important. This is what you need. The Brain Trust Advisors will work with you and help put one together for you. You talk to any of them about your financial future. Give yourself some peace of mind. Why a bucket strategy? We'll tell you in a second. 800-644-1150. That's the off-air number. Our number here in studio, on the air, we'd love to hear from you, 877-PLANNER. It can be on any money issue that you have right now. You're certainly welcome to give us a call, 877-752-6637. Okay, now, before we get into the actual sequence of returns risk, we're going to explain what it is, Professor Plum. People are often reluctant to say they're going to retire, especially as a market has been going rather well for the last 6-7 years.
Well, we're 7.5 years into a bull market. And so whether you're getting ready to retire or just investing, I was actually speaking with somebody the other day who had a settlement, a lump sum settlement come in, and they don't need the money right now. It's more for retirement. They're in their late 40s, and they're saying, well, should I go into the market right now? Should I? I mean, I know that I don't need this money for 15 plus years, but at the same time, I sure don't want to see it go down in value, at least not all of it. And so what happens? And they're realizing the one issue that everybody really needs to understand, that you cannot predict what's going to happen in the market next week, next year. I mean, we have no idea. Everybody focuses on how to, control the market, how to control your investing so that you can take advantage of the market. The only way you can control investing is to understand that you can't control the market. The market will do what it's going to do regardless of what you want it to do. You may want it to go up for the next couple of years, or maybe you're brand new at investing and you want it to go down so you can buy a bunch of stuff on sale, but you can't control it. Nothing you do can control it. So how do we adjust and basically manage the risk of the complete unknown?
Well, the unknown being, when is the market going to dive and what are we going to do about it if we have to retire? I had said this early on in the program, I think with the TV people, Professor Plum, that people who retired in, say, 2007, 2008,
right? And it was just as bad for people who wanted to retire in 2009, 2010.
But they looked at their... hey, I've been taking money out of my portfolio. I had enough to retire. I had $600,000-$700,000 or whatever the number was. And they said, sure, I could probably live off of that. But all of a sudden, that $600,000-$700,000 that they've been relying on within a year had dipped to maybe $400,000.
And it didn't seem to matter what you were invested in.
Right.
Because pretty much everything went down either in that year or a year or two after that, depending upon how you're dealing with
and
it.
And you had somebody who might have been taking, 4% out of their portfolio, which we'll also discuss on this, and all of a sudden, 4% of 600,000 is...
24,000.
Right, but that's a whole lot more than 4%. If you take $24,000 out of $600,000, that you're taking 8% out of a portfolio that's been cut down by a third.
And the statistics have shown that an 8% distribution does not have a really good success rate
right
over longer terms. And so whether you're just retiring, whether you retired 5 years ago and you're living on your portfolio and you're taking a distribution from your portfolio, you got everything's in balance, or whether you want to retire in 3 years and you say, my drop dead date for retirement is 3 years from now. What if? And I'm not saying it's going to, because I don't know. What if the market goes down right now? Can you still retire? And the only way to do that is to have some kind of controls over what you're going to spend, because what happens in the next 3, 4, 5 years has a huge, with the market I'm talking about, has a huge impact on your ability to reach your goals, if your goals are happening either now or in the next 3, 4, 5 years. And I would say that, even if the market goes up dramatically, and a lot of people have experienced an up market for the last several years, and they set their portfolios up, and now they think they're invincible. And so they have increased their spending. They've gotten used to more money.
And guess what happens?
And they think it's because they're geniuses. No, you just had a good run in the market. That's all it is.
Yep.
It wasn't because you were a genius. Almost anything works in the investing world if the market is going up.
All right, 877-PLANNER. We're going to talk more about this and what the real risk is. There are some numbers involved that I think are quite interesting. We've used these before, and I think it's an effective way to show exactly what we mean when we say sequence of returns, and we'll tell you how to avoid that. Okay, 877-PLANNER. We got some folks on hold. Stick around. Let's see. Let's move. Let's go to Dave first up this hour in New York. Hello, Dave.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Can't complain.
Oh, sure.
While I was on hold, I said, you could probably help me with what I'm planning on doing. But I got two offers, and if these offers are not good and you got a better idea, then I'm going to take your advice.
Okay.
I got $72,000 in debt. I'm going to put my house up to get a lower rate. I'm paying up to 7.9% on some Parent Plus loans.
Okay.
I got an offer from a mortgage company to bring it down to about 3.5%, and they got about $2,200 in closing costs. I got another offer for about 4% or 4.5% at about $700 in closing costs to get rid of some of this Parent Plus loans that I had for my kids.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be the better way to go? And then do you have a better way to do what I'm trying to do to reduce the interest rate on it? Parent Plus loans for the kids.
I don't know that I have a better way, because those are both, unless you can just miraculously come up with some money to pay it all off in the next couple of weeks, you're going to be borrowing the money. Yeah. Lottery! You're going to be borrowing the money to pay it off. So now we're just trying to find the best, most efficient use of money. And so what we would look at is how much you're currently paying, and it can commit towards that $72,000. But it sounds like both of them are going to be a much better deal than what you're doing, because at the current rate you're dealing with, 0.079, you're talking about an annual interest payment of roughly $5,600. That's just interest on that loan. Dropping it to 4
well,
or
they,
dropping...
They range between 6.5 and 7.9.
Okay.
So, and it's, I think it's 3 or 4 different loans, so I don't know if that matters.
Well, let's just take it all in the lower one. And
okay.
That's $4,800 of interest. And so if you're dropping it to less than half that number with the 3.5, you've got basically a 1 year break even on the $2,200 of expenses. You obviously have a much shorter period of time. So both of those options are better options. Now the issue is, how long will it take you to pay them back? Whether or not it makes more sense by having a half a point less, because $7,200 or $1,000. 0.05 times. That's obviously the wrong number. It's not a huge difference in interest between the 3.5. 72.
We'll do a quick calculator here and see what we come up with.
And that's only $360 in interest. So if you could have the $72,000 paid back over the next 4 or 5 years, then I would probably go with the 4% with the less out-of-pocket up front. However, if it's going to take you more than 3, 4, 5 years to pay this back, paying more interest up front paying more cost up front with a half point lower in interest will effectively help you over time, because you're going to be paying less in interest each year. And so the longer you have that loan, the better that is, even with that, money up front.
They were going to roll that into the loan. So,
well, either way, you're going to roll it one way or the other. It's either coming out of your pocket.
Yeah, I was kind of leaning towards that. No, it's going to, they're going to roll it into the loan size, essentially, I guess, it'd be 74.
Right, but this, or 72.7, either way, it's still, it's an expense, and it's going to, and even that has interest to it. So that's why it's, how long will it take you with these new lower interest rates to pay off this loan, these loans?
I'm going to guess probably 8+. It's going to be more than 3 to 5 years.
Then I would take the 3.5% loan, even though it has more upfront fees. The fact that I'm going to be maintaining it for that long, I'll still pay less out of pocket over the entire thing. Now, I haven't done the exact math, but my gut tells me that's what I'm doing.
Dave, I got to take a break. So if you want to hold on, we can talk to you more about this on the other side. If you have some more questions or anything else, we'll be happy to talk to you. Just got to take a quick break here and come back with more interesting questions. And yeah, hey, if you can cut it in half, do it. Stick around for more. 877-PLANNER, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, the Brain Trust from Lucia Capital Group. We're coming right back. Helping you out with your money issues, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Did you catch all that?
Yeah, read it.
I read it twice. It's amazing. Actually, what I want to tell you, though, is that guess what? The fall workshops are here. Well, they're not here. They're coming.
Coming up.
They're not that far away, folks. 2016, it's the alternative investment workshops, and this is for the fall season. And that's what we're going to be talking about, Professor Plum, you and a bunch of the other Lucia Capital Group advisors.
Yes, we will.
Is coming up, the first one of the fall series, September 17th, and that's in San Diego, California. These are all, I believe, all Saturday mornings and all around 9 o'clock start.
All local Saturday time. Morning, all 9 o'clock local starts.
Exactly. Meet the Brain Trust, San Diego, Saturday morning, September 17th. Love to see you in San Diego. October 1st, Las Vegas, Nevada. That'll be a nice big one. Las Vegas, and then Saturday, October 8th, Phoenix, Arizona. Those are the next three, the first three of the series, and you can sign up for them. You go to our website. It's all set up there, wealthed.com, wealth education, wealthed.com. Little events tab, you click on that, and then you sign up. It's all free. Just tell us who's coming, how many are in your group, and we will set aside a seat for you. The Alternative Investments Workshop, learn all about those. We'll tell you more about it as we get closer, but that's it in 2016. San Diego, Las Vegas, and Phoenix. Those are the first three, wealthed.com. Okay, 877-PLANNER, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Just to wrap things up, we were talking with our previous caller, Dave in New York, who had a couple of different...
Well, he's got some outstanding student debt, and the interest rates range from 6.5% to almost 8%. And he has the option of, you know, basically taking some money out of his home and being able to reduce that interest rate. And because it's under $100,000, it's still potentially deductible. You know, so that makes it nice. But he has a choice of either a 4% loan, but it and I'm assuming, and I forgot to ask Dave this, but I'm assuming they're all fixed interest rate loans. A 4% loan, but had $2,200 up front cost. Or that was a 3.5% loan with $2,200 up front, or a 4% loan with $700 up front. So which one makes sense? I ballparked it in my head about 4 or 5 years, and I was off on my math. The break even is in the 8-ish range, 8 years, a couple months or so, but they're both fairly close in actuarial issues unless he can pay it off fairly quickly. He said it would probably take him about 8 years to pay it off. And so what I did was I looked at what is the payment that's required to pay on. He was talking also about rolling the cost into the loan. So with the 3.5% loan, he was starting off with $74,200 because he was rolling the cost into it. With the 4% loan, he was only starting with $72,700. The payment is almost identical on an 8-year period of time. And even over a 10-year period of time, it's not that much difference to where that the 3.5% loan is that much better. But if he can figure out a way to pay it off sooner, it's a little bit better to go with the lower upfront fees but the slightly higher interest rate over that period of time. So if he thinks he can have it paid off over the next 8 years, I would do the 4% loan with the $700 up front rather than the 3.5% loan with the $22 up front. On the other side, if he said it was going to take him 15 years to pay it back, I would have gone with the higher money up front but the lower interest rate for the longer period of time. So he said 8 years. At 8 years, it's pretty much a wash. And since it's pretty much a wash at that time, I'm going to take the lower upfront fee because I'm hoping that I can pay it off quicker and that'll be in my advantage, because it's hard to make up that difference in fees up front.
Yeah, you got to obviously make up for having paid those. And, you know, one thing to be said, too, if you're going to pay it off in 8 years or roughly 8 years, either way, going with the higher interest rate loan, you do get to write off that interest. I mean, it's not going to be a ton more, but it's going to be something that could help.
But he may or may not be able to write off the interest rate on the student loans that he currently has. That
but it could be an option.
Yeah, but both options are better than the interest rates and better than the loans that he has right now. Both of them work better. So paying off the existing PLUS loans, he's took out some loans for his kids' education. Both of the refinance options, unless he can pay them off within about a year, both of those options are better than maintaining what he's got going on right now.
877-PLANNER, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. We're going to get into more of this idea of sequence of returns, tell you a little bit more about that in just a second, but we'll do that after the bottom of the hour. I wanted to get to at least one email here, which I will do right here. Ken in Dallas, Texas, who says, I'm 67 and retired, married, and our income is $105,000 from pensions and my wife's Social Security. I will take my Social Security at age 70. If I withdraw all of my SEP IRA funds, about $120,000, how will they be taxed?
Well, the majority of that will be taxed in the 25 and the 28% income tax bracket. Now, would I do all of it? $120,000? No, I probably would not do all of it. I might split it into 3 years, the year I'm 67, 68, and 69. So I get it at least partially done or all the way done between now and when I have to take a required minimum distribution, and also now and when I take my obviously much larger Social Security at age 70. Because you're at 105 now without your IRA distribution and without your Social Security. I'm assuming the reason you're postponing your Social Security is because you wanted it to grow to a much bigger number. So it's probably going to be $30,000, $40,000 more, of which 85% of it will be taxable. So that's going to take you and push you almost out of the 25% income tax bracket and push the IRA distribution into the 28% income tax bracket. And luckily, he doesn't have a state income tax to worry about. So I would probably start taking as much as I could in each of the next 3 years or four, depending upon when his birthday is, before the required minimum distribution year, and try, or before I turn 70, before I turn on my Social Security, and try to get as much as I could in the 25% income tax bracket over to a Roth IRA. Because I know that once the Social Security kicks in, I'm going to be in the 28% bracket. So why not do some proactive right now and get it over to the Roth? And so I wouldn't do it in one lump sum. $120,000 is going to bump you in a bracket or two. It will also make your spouse's Medicare more expensive. And so I don't really want to do that, but I would do some of it, and I would do it up to the top of the 25% income tax bracket.
Yeah, and he might be able to get rid of a good chunk of that, if not all of that $120,000. I mean, pay taxes on it.
$40,000 a year.
Yeah, within the 25% tax bracket. Because again, what a lot of people don't think about is that it'll subject your Social Security to taxation.
He may be able to do $50,000 or $60,000 a year. I don't know if I'd do it all, but I mean, now it's a matter of your appetite for writing the check. How much are you willing to pay Uncle Sam right now? You're going to pay him one day or the other. So it's pay him now, pay him later, one way or the other. Pay you 25% right now. You may actually have a little bit of room in the 15% bracket, depending upon what your itemized deductions are. But definitely use a 15 if you have it. I would even consider using partially in the 25. The other side, that was your IRA. Does your spouse have an IRA as well, or tax-deferred accounts as well? I would be more inclined to do bigger conversions if my spouse has deferred accounts as well.
Yeah, the tax bill can often really throw people. I mean, you know, we've had questions from people who email us and they say, yeah, well, what's the difference? If I take it all out right now, I'll pay, you know, I'm in the 15% bracket or whatever it is, so I'm not that concerned about it. They forget that, yes, that adds income and it's going to add to your bracket.
Yeah, the only reason I would not do some form of a distribution conversion right now is if that 105 is coming from employment or from some source of distribution that is going to go away. If you got a deferred comp payout that lasts for 7 years and you're 4 or 5 years into it, and it's going to stop pretty soon and bring your overall income down.
Well, then,
but assuming
that
105 is going to continue because it's pensions and social, I'm going to do some conversions. Not all of it, but I'm going to do big chunks of it.
Okay, 877-PLANNER. We'll talk more about some of the sequence of returns risk, but we also got your phone calls. Get on board. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. We're coming right back. Talking to you about your money strategies. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, 877-PLANNER. Get on board. We got some lines open for you. So if you've got a money question, you give us a call right now. We're here in studio helping you out with whatever happens to be on your mind from a financial standpoint. It could be anything at all. Retirement, Social Security. We had a question on student loans earlier. We've got insurance questions. You can also email us at our website, wealthed.com, wealthed.com, at the Find Your Answer link. Okay, now we presented an issue earlier in the hour, Professor Plum, regarding retiring at the quote-unquote wrong time. Okay?
How do you know it's the wrong time? Maybe you retire at what seems like a really good time, and then 6 months later,
that's exactly
a
it.
Year later,
yeah.
It doesn't look quite so good.
It doesn't look quite so good, and so you've decided, for whatever reason, to take money to live off of.
Well, you have to. I mean, you decided to retire, and you don't have pensions and Social Security that cover 100% of your needs. So you got to rely on your portfolio.
That's what
most of us are going to do.
Well, that's it. But I'm saying you've decided to do this. You've decided to take the money that you're going to live off of out of your equity portfolio because you had maybe 50-50 stocks and bonds, 60-40, 60-30 and some cash, whatever it happens to be. And you've decided that that's what you're going to do. Now,
because that's what everybody's telling you. You need to have a balanced portfolio. And you just put it all in this nice, pretty pie chart of different allocations. And because they earn money, everything's going to be fine. Just take your distribution from there. And you've got a 96% chance based on historical return probability that your portfolio will survive.
Now, here's the problem with that, Professor Plum. As you know, if you happen to retire at the wrong time, and you happen to be doing that, and the stock market dives within the first few years of your retirement, that is money that you could never, ever get back.
The ones we think of most often would be if we retired in the late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
We had a little problem in 2000. If we retired in 2006, 7, heaven forbid, 2008. Maybe you didn't retire in 2008, but you were let go. And you hadn't planned on retiring in 2008, but you did because you were 62 years old. Your company downsized when the market went to heck in a handbasket, and you weren't able to find another job. Unfortunately, it happens.
And here's the thing about that, and the point that we need to make here, Professor Plum, is that what happens if you're going to take money out of your portfolio like that, all right, which is not a good idea, but if you're going to do that, what happens in the first few years of your retirement with the stock market can have a significant and in some cases irreversible effect on your portfolio, can it not?
You may have to make dramatic changes in your spending habits to be able to survive or have your portfolio survive at least as long as you do. And that becomes painful when you get used to a certain income level and then you say, I have to cut back significantly or else I'm going to be forced to basically cut back to just Social Security and maybe a little bit of pension.
Right, and you don't want to have to say, well, the market was down this year 10%. My portfolio was thus down almost 10%. So here's what I got to do. I've got to take a 10% cut in pay so that I don't run out of money.
I've never heard an advisor say that. I've only heard journalists write about that.
I have too.
Saying, well, when the market's down, just cut back on what you're spending or cut back all the way. Don't spend anything. Don't take any distribution from your portfolio until it recovers. And then you'll be okay.
Yeah, can you imagine that?
That means that you are no longer in control of your own retirement. You're no longer in control of when you want to go on vacation, when you want to go help the kids, grandkids, whatever the case may be. It's all up to the market, which we've seen is not necessarily our friend at times.
No, it's not. And so people are out there saying, okay, yeah, there's the problem, but what am I supposed to do about this? You're saying I cannot control the market. You're saying I really oftentimes cannot control when I retire, which is true in many cases, or I don't want to have the market dictate when I retire. And so I have to live off of something. I've got a 60-40 mix of stocks, bonds, whatever it is, and I got to start taking some money. What am I supposed to do? Well, Professor Plum, there's a strategy that can help you deal with that.
There is. Don't rely on the market for the next 5 or 10 years.
Exactly. Now, we're going to talk more about this, but of course, I still want to take a couple of calls. 877-PLANNER, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. When we say strategy, I think you can probably get a pretty good idea what kind of strategy it is. Just know that you're listening and watching to the Bucket Strategy Investing Program. We'll explain how that all works. I want to take a few calls, though. 877-PLANNER. Let's move along next to Amanda in Houston, Texas. Hello, Amanda.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you today?
Doing fine. Raining here in Texas.
Yeah, well, that's good. Yeah, I don't know if it's good.
It's good.
Maybe
bad.
It's not good. Yeah, I'm coming from a very dry area, so anytime somebody says it's raining, I say that's good. Well, how can we help you today?
Okay, I have a friend. She's 66. She's still working, and when she takes her Social Security, she's not taking it yet, it would probably be about $1,500 a month. So she's waited till 66 so she could still make some money in real estate. Her husband is 10 years younger than she is and makes considerably more money, intends to keep working for the next 10 years. And she asked me, if she takes her Social Security now, can she switch to her husband's when he is 65 years old or 65?
Well, it's very unlikely that it'll ever work out in her favor. Well, it's actually better than that. She's not going to get a spousal retirement benefit. The first key to getting a spousal retirement benefit is the worker who you're trying to get a benefit from, her husband in this case, has to have applied for a benefit. The earliest he can apply for a benefit is 62. At 62, she'll be 72. So she will have already either let her benefit grow to a much larger number than it is right now, or she'll take it now. And right now, it's bigger than half of what his could be. So she's not going to be able to get a spousal retirement benefit. The reason I say that, you said her benefit right now would be about $1,500 a month, correct?
Yes.
That is more than a spousal benefit can be.
The most a spousal benefit could be is what, about $1,350?
A little over $1,300 right now, $1,325, $1,330, somewhere in that range. That's the highest that the spousal benefit could be. She's already getting $1,500. And if she continues to wait until a little bit later on, until maybe age 70, her benefit will go up over $2,000 a month, or around $2,000 a month, which is a lot more than the spousal benefit will ever be. So whether or not she wants to defer taking her benefit or not depends on how long she thinks she's going to live. It has nothing to do with the spousal benefit because she's not going to get one.
Okay. But what if he dies and she would get a widow's benefit then?
She would be eligible for a widow's benefit. Then, and so that, unfortunately, that's going to change everything. We want to play the game of, if he were to die now, we'd want to look at what his benefit would be compared to what her benefit is. And most likely, well, actually, if we take the bigger benefit, I mean, from what you've said, it sounds like his benefit would be a lot larger. And so she's 66 or going to be 66 very soon. She would just apply for a widow's benefit at that time. So if something happened to him after she turns 66, but before he ever started taking his benefit sounds like, from what you've said, it's going to be a lot larger than her ever benefit will ever become, so she might as well take it right away. And the widow's benefit does not grow once the widow defers it to age 66, and full retirement age for her is 66, is what I'm saying.
Okay, so hers would not grow because she's already 66, or will be 66.
The widow's benefit is basically locked in once the widow is over 60, or their full retirement age. For her, that's 66. Now,
right.
The longer he lives, the longer he defers. If he were to defer until age 70 to take it, then her widow's benefit would be more than it is right now. But that means he's got to live another, 15 years?
And she does too. She would have to live too.
Yeah, well, she'd have to live a long time too. So the real issue is her benefit. Let's focus on her benefit because that's what's actually available at 66. Does she think that she's going to live into her mid-80s? If she thinks she's going to live into her mid-80s and she doesn't need the money, postpone taking it a little while. Now, her living into her mid-80s only means her husband has to live into his mid-70s. As long as he lives into his mid-70s and she lives into her mid-80s, her postponing until age 70 makes a little bit of sense, as long as they don't need the money. If both of them die before those time horizons, then she should take it now, or at age 66.
Right. And unfortunately, no one has this magic ball to say when we're going to die.
No.
We just know we're all going to die someday.
Yeah, and that's unfortunately the biggest piece of this puzzle, Amanda, is if we knew how long we were going to live, we could really calculate which benefit is best.
I was talking to somebody about this the other day. Her parents died at 75 and 77. But they were both smokers. They drank. They did a lot of things that weren't all that healthy. But the grandparents, their parents, all lived into their 90s. So do we go off of the parental life history or the grandparents' life history? And her life history, she was going to bet on the grandparents because she had taken a lot better care of herself than what her parents did.
Yeah. Does that help you out, Amanda?
That's really helpful, yes. I enjoy your show. I love it when I'm driving and you folks are off.
Thank you.
Well, thank you,
Drive careful in the rain.
Yeah, be very careful out there. All right. Thank you.
And send some of that rain over to the West Coast. They've got a couple areas that really need some rain right now because they're burning.
Yeah, they do. Thank you, Amanda. If you have any other questions, please hold on. We'll be happy to talk to you a little bit more during the break. The spousal benefit, of course, is confusing because it sounds like it's an extra benefit beyond what you're getting. It's a supplemental benefit is what it is. All right, we got to take a break. We will talk more with you. We got some lines open, just a couple. Actually, four lines open now. 877-PLANNER, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. More of your questions, emails, comments, etc. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group. We're coming right back. Bucket Strategy Investing, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. Another hour is just ahead in many cities, so please keep it right here for more of the best in money information. 877-PLANNER, if you want to get in touch with us right here. Lines open, 877-PLANNER. Emails at our website, wealthed.com. Okay, now getting back to this whole idea of sequence of returns. Now, it sounds sort of academic, doesn't it? It sounds a little, I don't know, nerdy. Sequence of returns risk. It sounds like one of those terms that economists often make up to make themselves sound important. You know,
well, I'm sure it probably was made up by an economist, or
it may have been. But as it turns out, it's an actual real risk,
and
Professor Plum.
It's one that we really, once we start needing to rely on a distribution from our portfolio, we really need to avoid the negative impact of sequences of returns.
Right. So here's the scenario, and this really I think helps point it out. We use these two people. Mr. Smith, Ms. Jones, okay? Obviously for illustrative purposes only.
Not to be confused with anybody you know as Mr. Smith or Mrs. Jones.
No.
Ms. Jones.
Okay, so they both have a $100,000 investment. Identical, okay? They're both 60% stocks. Identical. 60% stocks, 40% bonds.
And that's a common situation for
it really
people.
Is.
I mean, that's what a lot of people will say. Just make your portfolio more conservative. And so if you're, you know, 100, if you're 60 years old, 40% should be in bonds, 60% in stocks, and then just take a distribution, you'll be fine.
Right. And so what they were told was put 60% in stock, 40% in bonds, and you want, what do you want every year? They said $5,000 a year out of this portfolio. So they said, great.
5% distribution.
We'll take a 5% distribution. We'll make it exactly pro rata, some out of the stocks, some out of the bonds.
Well, even if they take it all out of the bonds to begin with, they rebalance it at the end of the year because you want to stay 60-40.
Right, exactly. And so that's what they do. So here's what happens. The only difference between these two, Mr. Smith and Ms. Jones, is that Mr. Smith decided to retire in 1969. Ms. Jones is waiting until 1979, doing exactly the same thing with the exact same portfolio. So Mr. Smith retires 1969. It was a bad year for stocks. Stocks went down 2.6%.
I mean, 2.6, that doesn't sound like a horrible year.
Well, it doesn't, except that he took $5,000 out of his portfolio that had declined. So instead of $100,000, he's left with $92,000.
Okay. But I still need my 5 next year.
Well, yeah, I know. So the next year you took 5% out, but the market had gone up 5%. But you're left with $91,000.
Well, I almost covered my distribution.
Almost, but not quite. Over the next few years, the market in 1973 and 1974 was down both times.
Yeah, that
6.5% in 1973, 12.5% in 1974. Now, here's what's been happening. Because he had bad years the first 5-6 years, and there were a couple of up years on there too, make no mistake.
But because, I mean, if you look at just the first 2 years, down 3, call it, and up 5, that's I'm back above even. My return is a positive return over those 2 years.
But you're still $8,500 below your original $100,000.
Because I'm taking money out.
This is taking money out of a declining portfolio. So just those first few years, you had a 2% downturn, 6.5%, 12.5% downturn between 1969 and 1975. Now, the rest of them were, you know, not, you had some up years and some down years, quite a few good up years. But here's the problem, because that downturn happened early.
And because I was taking money out early.
Right. 1969, he started with $100,000. By 1979, taking $5,000 a year out of a portfolio that was kind of volatile, by 1979, he only had $56,000 left in that.
Okay, now I'm taking out 9%.
You are, and that makes it even worse. By 1989, his money was gone.
Well, yeah, you can't take out 9% of a portfolio each year. And even back then, those were high-interest years.
They were high-interest years.
The bond portfolios were making some serious money.
The high-interest years, in 1981, the stock market gained 22%. In 1982, it was up 14%. So even with good stock years, you're still, by 1989, you're out of money.
Now, was I changing my distribution, or was it just a flat 5,000?
No, flat 5,000.
So that doesn't even keep me pace with inflation.
No, it does not.
We had some serious inflation in the late 70s.
That's exactly what you had. Okay, so now, 1989, Mr. Smith is out of money. His 100,000 is gone. Now, let's ask Ms. Jones, who also had $100,000, 60-40 mixed stocks of bonds, was taking out $5,000 a year, but instead of retiring when Mr. Smith did, she waited until 1979.
She was 10 years younger.
She was 10 years younger, she waited. Well, guess what happened? The first, wow. The stock market was up every single year. Doesn't say which, I'm guessing S&P. But stocks were up every single year until 2000. So there were a lot of good years, but especially early on. The first few years, she was up, the stocks were up 14%. 1980, it was up 24%. 81, 3, 82, 16. Anyway, so she's taken $5,000 out of a year, but out of her portfolio. Where Mr. Smith, after 10 years of retirement, his $100,000 had dipped to $56,000. After 10 years of retirement, Ms. Jones is up to $262,000.
She's gone up quite
nicely.
She's
not only not chopped in half like Mr. Smith was, she's more than doubled her original $100,000.
She's up 2.5% times.
Just because she retired at a different time. By 1989, I'm sorry, after 20 years, when Mr. Smith was out of money, Ms. Jones had $664,000. Exact same asset allocation,
taking the exact same withdrawal.
The
only thing that changed was the time horizon.
Time horizon.
When. And there are ways to hopefully combat some of that. But to do it, you have to be willing to take a little bit less potential return. The reason that you stay in the market is because you want to make money. But the market doesn't always make money. When we're talking about the market in this case, the market as a whole, we're talking about the bond market, the stock market, we're talking about the markets.
The broad markets, yes.
You know, both sides of the fixed income and equity side of the house. And so you have to be able to pull back your aggressiveness. You have to be more conservative to be able to make it last longer.
Well, and the interesting thing
is, you have to be more conservative
is,
to potentially make some money.
In both of these portfolios, Mr. Smith, who was out of money in 20 years, he didn't even get to 30 years. His average rate of return over those years was 10.5%.
No, the portfolio not taking a distribution.
Yes. The average rate of return, thank you. The average rate of, not his, the average rate of return of the of stocks.
Of the blended portfolio.
Was 10.5%. Average rate of return for Ms. Jones, who had a whole lot more money, 9.6%. Okay, now.
So that is a portfolio that does not have a distribution associated with it, had a 10%+ rate of return over the period of time, but the person went broke taking money out. The other person had a lower rate of return, but had more money.
Had way more money.
Because they started at different times.
$650,000 more. All right, we're going to continue this. If you need the brain trust off the air, talk to Professor Rick Plum, any of the Lucia Capital Group advisors about this very topic. 800-644-1150. Talk to them off the air. 800-644-1150. We've got another hour. More coming up of Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.